As I mentioned, a normal practice is that for Parsha, we do one Aliyah a week, one Aliyah a year, and this year is Shishi. So the exception sometimes is that if, for whatever reason, the calendar last year didn't allow us to do the Parsha, we might theoretically double up. So I wanted to check, in terms of last year's records, if we had had opportunity to learn Chamishi together. So maybe if not, we would combine Chamishi and Shishi. And guess what I discovered? Apparently, the calendar has been such that we have never done Parsha Seir. Sorry? Yeah, so that's what it would mean. The policy would then mean that we do the first six aliyahs. So that's not really so wieldy. That doesn't really accomplish that much as far as our overall goal. So I think at this point, the beginning of the era is going to have to wait for the next cycle. It's not so far off. So it's just too much to make up, and it's probably a Moshe Paschal in that. But we will instead stick with our regular policy of just doing Shishi, because otherwise it's not hopeless. So with all due respect to the first five aliyahs of Vayera, Shishi is a very significant aliyah, as we'll see, that it contains a good chunk of the Makos, and therefore it's in some ways as good as any a sample aliyah in this parsha. This parsha, of course, is the bulk of the Makos, except for the last three, which will be in next week's Parsha. So clearly one of the dominant themes, if not the dominant theme in Parshas Vayera, is the Makos. And this Aliyah is Makos-filled and has a lot of the typical concepts associated with the Makos. So if we had to pick one Aliyah for Vayera, apparently that's what's the case so far, so maybe Shishi isn't such a bad place to start. So here, as this Aliyah begins, it's basically Erev Arov, or basically the eve of Arov. We're about to have that Maka. So let's start with that. This is Parakhas Pasuk Yates. V'samti fidus ben ani ben amecha l'machar yiyah osazah. So Paro was told that there will be a fidus placed between the Jews and the Mitzrim, and tomorrow is going to be the Os. So, what does a fidus mean? So, there are different interpretations along the Rishon, and the two basic interpretations that you see is that fidus means, like pidyon, means liberty, means Yeshua, that basically the Jews who are intertwined with the Mitzrim will be saved, will have a salvation. And others, many others, translated as a distinction. That there should be a division between the Jews and the Mitzrim. And the understanding is that the fact that this Makkah can distinguish between the Jews and the Mitzrim, that itself is God's way of advertising the difference and advertising his ability to distinguish between the two. So that's the emphasis here, that this Makkah will accomplish this, will accomplish establishing a distinction between the Mitzrim and the Jews. So this word, l'machar, that this is said, as we said, Erev Arov, the day before, so the Oznayim L'Torah, the Litzke Rav, has a comment over here that machar is always the proper time for such reckonings, that you're about to approach God the next day, you're about to be called to task the next day, so one day in advance, that's the time to really focus on tshuva. We have the Maimer Chazal, Shuv Yom Echad Lefnei Mosecha, that person should do tshuva the day before he's about to die. So we always interpret that really to mean live every day as if it's your last. It's not literally a day, but just assume that any day that you're alive, that might theoretically be the last day that you have, and do tshuva then. But he understands it to mean specifically one day before, that that's the zone, that you need a proper window, that too much in advance, when you think you have forever to live, So then you think, okay, you don't have to really focus on doing tshuva, you don't have to focus on some impending danger because something still could happen. You don't think about it so much. And if it was mamish right in front of you, if it was seconds away, so that's already impossible to focus. It's a tirif hadas, he describes. So it's really, you need a certain very specific window in order to be able to get the right mindset. And that's what this macha represents. This is happening tomorrow, so tomorrow you're reckoning with God. So take today, this is the day when you should really think about the path that you're on. Okay, so the next pasuk says, Vayas Hashem Kain, Vayavo Orov Kaved, Beis Safaro, Beis Avada, V'Muchal Eretz Mitzvayim, Tishaches Ha'aretz, Mipnei Ha'orov. So we find that that God did this, and there's this tremendous swarm that comes into the house of Paro, and into the house of his Avadim, and all of Mitzrayim, and it destroys the land because of the swarm. Okay, so the next pasuk goes on to say that Paro after this says, "Vayikra Paro Moshe Aaron Leimor Luchu Zivchu Lokechem Ba'aretz." So Paro calls Moshe and Aaron, and he says to them, "Okay, so why don't you go do your korbanos that you would ask to do? Why don't you do them here in the land?" So Mefarshim discuss. That's a strange thing to say, that they wanted to go out into the Midbar. So why should Paro think that things have changed now? That, okay, now I can suggest that it should be done here, and that will go over just as well. That will also have the same effect. So there are a number of suggestions in the Farshim. The Malbim writes that perhaps what's going on here is that they had said they wanted to go out to the Midbar, so Paro took that to mean that maybe God's presence is only out there, that maybe here there is no impact of this God. But now that they're saying, oh, that I want to show you that God is here, so he says, okay, so if God is here, you could do your korbanos here also. That's also going to have the same effect. The Meshech Chachma has a slight twist on that. Meshech Chachma writes that the idea is that if you want to say that this displays God's hashkacha and this whole notion of distinguishing between the Jews and the Mitzrayim, so therefore Paro is saying, okay, so now I see that Taka, God is acting here also, that God's providence is apparently in effect here as well, so therefore why can't you bring your korbanos in this location? And the Sefer Eish Tamid, the Sichos of Yisrael Meir Druk, so he suggests a little bit more of a spin on this, that Paro was saying that even if you want to tell me that it's only the land out there that is Kodesh, that is proper, and that is subject to what you want to do, but now we see that this Makkah shows that God can mix things up, so to speak, so he can bring that land here as well. So therefore, that was kind of his maybe challenge to them, that you can do the korbanos here. So Moshe responds, V'yomer Moshe, lo nochol ma'asas kein, ki to'avas Mitzrayim nizbach la'Hashem Elokeinu, hein nizbach es to'avas Mitzrayim le'inehem v'lo yiskuluna. So what are we going to do? He says, we're going to bring korbanos, so the korbanos that we have, these are the animals we're going to sacrifice, these are the animals that the Egyptians worship. So that's not going to go over well. And they're going to stone us, if that's the way the pasuk reads. We'll discuss in a second. So, first of all, Shlom Shmuel Hirsch comments, this idea of ki to'avas Mitzrayim, it's a little hard to translate exactly what it means. That means either that we hate what the Mitzrayim do, the fact that they worship idols, they worship animals, that's something that we consider to be a to'eva, and that's what we're sacrificing. Or what we are doing, that we're sacrificing their gods, that's going to be a to'eva to them. And either way, it's something that's going to create awkwardness and tension. But Rav Hirsch goes on to say that within either interpretation, the point is still the same, that this has to do with the whole impact of the Torah on the world and of the faith of God in the world, that the rest of the world was worshiping the forces of nature, And we believe that we're not controlled by the forces of nature. We can take those forces of nature and overcome them. And more than that, direct them to God, sacrifice those forces of nature themselves to God. So that's the whole distinction between the mystery attitude, the general idolatrous attitude, and the Jewish attitude that's being emphasized here. And Moshe is saying, so this isn't something that we can do in their presence. Interesting that his name was Torah, comments here that Lonochol Masoske says basically it's not nice to, when people have false gods, to kill their gods right in front of them. Is not nice. It's not the etiquette. So it's interesting what exactly that implication is. Where exactly is the balance in terms of, say, refuting forcefully of a desire, but also having a recognition that you're taking people's objects with reverence and creating a tremendous clash, a tremendous conflict. It's an interesting point, one way or another, but that's the observation that he has here. And this idea, the pasuk ends, v'lo yuskalunu. So what does that mean? They're not going to stone us. So what's the issue? They're not going to stone us. So Rashi says that it's bitmia. Rashi says that it's saying, what? V'lo yuskalunu? They're not going to stone us? Avada, they will stone us. We have to worry that we're not going to be able to get away with doing this in public. So we can't do this here. Well, Unkelus has a different implication. So Unkelus, assuming how much emphasis he put on this, the language of Unkelus is that he adds the word that they're going to say that they're going to stone us. That they're going to say, hello, Yemru Lemergamana. Don't we have to worry that they're going to talk about stoning us? So in the Shiurim of Reb Simcha Maimon, which was recently published on Chumash, so he suggests that they weren't really worried about the Mitzrayim killing them. Because at this point, they've already established enough pachad, they've already established enough intimidation, that it's not so likely that the Mitzrayim are going to actually try to stone them. But they're going to want to stone them. They're going to talk and they're going to grumble about wanting to stone them. And to that, that's what the message here is, a little similar to this Lo Nachum point of Lutzkarav, that it's not a good idea to do things that cause people to want to stone you. Whether or not you're really worried that they're going to be able to pull it off, just the idea that you're creating that kind of provocation and you're creating that type of displeasure, so that's not necessarily a wise move or a safe move or perhaps even a respectful move. And therefore, for all those reasons, this is something to avoid. So there's a lot that's contained within that pasuk. What exactly is the nature of this concern that Moshe is expressing? Is it that they're physically afraid? Or is it that they feel that it's not proper, lo nachon? Or is it somewhere in the middle or a combination of both? It's an interesting range of interpretations. It's
fine. But later they did prep sheep anyways.
Yes, which is also interesting that especially there, we also say that that's one of the reasons why Shabbos HaGadol is called Shabbos HaGadol, that because the nace that happened, that we survived that. So there's a lot that we have to try to figure out about this pasuk with its range of interpretations. Because again, when he says lo nachon, especially that point from the Liskarab, I think he must refer to a certain balance, that at some point it's necessary, but it's not something that they want to do gratuitously. And therefore, also to say, to combine that with what we were just saying from Unkelus, that listen, you know, clearly there's a tension here between the Jews and the Mitzrayim. But the question is the very careful balance between what do you need to do and how much do you want to provoke just grumbling unnecessarily. So the idea that, okay, they're going to talk about us and they're going to want to kill us, even if they're practically speaking held back from it, is something to be worried about, which is a big Moshe Haskel in life in general, because sometimes, especially we talk, the nation is so focused on politics and things like that, that sometimes there's a feeling that, okay, so when you are on top, so okay, you're on top. You don't have to worry so much about what the other side is going to do, because you can stop them from doing it. But there is an end to that. Usually there are shifts and there are waves, and to have the other side be angry at you even if they're not in the capacity to do anything about it right now, is usually a problematic situation. And sometimes people tend to be separated from that, tend to not really feel that, because they think, okay, so we're in charge, so grumble all you want, it's not going to make a difference. But that grumbling eventually has an impact. And perhaps this is a little bit of a Musar HaSkil here also, that listen, when you have to take a decisive move, right? So when, like you were mentioning, where they're on the way out and they have already got to establish what is the message here. Okay, so that's what it is. But in the middle of this process, just to provoke, maybe that's not the wisest thing. So it's any way you look at it, it's an interesting pasuk. So the psukim continue, Derech Shlosh Yomim Melech Bamidbar, V'Zavachnu L'Hashem Elokeinu Kasha Yomer Eleinu. So they said, let's walk out 3 days into the desert, and there we will sacrifice to our God, like he has, or he will command us. But Yomer Paro, Anochi Ashalach Eschem, Uzvachtem L'Hashem Elokeichem Bamidbar, Rak Harchek Losachiku Valeches Hatiru Badi. So Paro says, okay, I'll let you go, and you can sacrifice, you can go into the Midbar, but don't go too far away, you should daven for me, he asks. But Yomer Moshe, so Moshe says, Hineh Anochi Yotze Me'imach, V'ha'atarti Hashem, V'sar Ha'arov, Miparo Me'avado, V'me'amo Mochar, Rak Al Yosef Paro Hasel, V'vilti Shalach Esa'am, L'zboach Hashem. So Moshe's response is, okay, listen, I am going to go out, and I will also daven that the situation with Smaka should be reversed from Paro and from his Avadim, that I'm going to do tomorrow. But don't play games with us anymore. Don't play around with what you're going to let us do. Vayetze Moshe mi Paro, so Moshe goes out, v'yet Taro Hashem, and indeed he does daven on his behalf. That's what it sounds like. Rav Schwab has a comment in a Sefer on Chumash over here that this is questionable, you might think. Why should Moshe daven on behalf of Paro? That's kind of going against his own purpose, right? The whole idea is they're trying to make a message here with these makos, and we want them to be effective. So how's he going to sign up for the other side here? He's going to daven on behalf of Paro to do it. That's going to work against his purposes. So he suggests, and he brings other indications like this as well, that the biggest impact that the Jews can have is that they should be able to show a Kiddush Hashem by showing that their tefillos are effective. So if Moshe is going to daven on behalf of Paro, and that's going to have an impact, so that's worth it. That Kiddush Hashem that comes from showing that their tefillos are listened to, that itself is a bigger part of the message than having this makkah continue. Okay, so then the psukim continue. V'yasa Hashem kidvar Moshe v'yasa ha'orav miparo me'avodav v'me'amo lo nishar echad. So Moshe did this and the makkah was reversed. Nothing was left over. Everything was gone. Which is interesting. I hear the commentaries say that there was a desire not to allow the Mitzrim to benefit from any of the animals, that there shouldn't be any hides that could be valuable. So this was different than the Tzvardeya. There you find that there was all the dead frogs left around. Here, everything was taken away. Everything was removed so as not to allow them to benefit at all. And here, what's the result? Once again, the Achbei Paro is libo gamba pamazos v'lo shilachisam. So Paro here hardens his heart, and he is not going to let them go, so it's time for the next makkah. This idea that all the animals come into the urban areas here, that all the animals come into the city, so there is a statement in the Yalkut Mamloes that this is Mida Keneged Mida, that, and we'll see another reference to this in a minute, but that the idea was that the Mitzrim, one of the things they did to the Jews, one of the ways in which they tormented them, was they sent them out into the forest to go hunt animals for them. And they did that both because it was annoying work for them and because it was dangerous and they didn't care about them. or they wanted them to be exposed to danger. And that is evocative of the often quoted tshuva of the Nota Behuda. The Nota Behuda has a tshuva in Yeridei in Siman Yud, where he talks about the question of hunting. And he says, is it right for a Jew to go hunting as sport? And there he takes the strong stance that it's one thing if you're hunting for food, that's a different story. But to hunt for sport, to hunt as a game, is not a good activity for a nice Jewish boy. And he has a number of reasons why. It's just not what we do as Jews. We don't go hunting for fun. And included among the issues is it's not dangerous. You're risking your life hanging out with the animals just to play a game. That's on top of many other reasons, something that's objectionable about it. So here we find that already the Mitzrim were forcing the Jews to do this non-Jewish activity, to go out and hunt, and that's a mita k'neged mita, so everything gets reversed here. Okay, so then Parak Tes starts. It says, "Vayomer Hashem al Moshe bo el paro, v'dibarte elav, ko amar Hashem, Elohei ha'ivrim, shalach es ami, v'yavnuni." Once again, go, Moshe, you should go to Paro and tell him, this is what God says, you have to let my people go. Because if you're going to refuse and you are still going to hold on to them, so there's going to be a major plague on all of your animals, on the field, on the horses, on the camels. Everything is going to take a hit if you're going to keep this going. So it's interesting that here it says Yad Hashem, it says God's hand. So all the makos were by the Yad Hashem. So the Mefarshim try to figure out what's special about this makah that it has to say Yad Hashem specifically here. So there are a number of suggestions. Some say that this is different from some of the other makos because we don't find that Moshe and Aaron have to do something in order to make it happen. Others suggest that maybe it's more direct in the sense that other makos, they have a reality and they have an impact. So let's say, for example, Dam, all the water turns to blood, so the impact is that they don't have any water to drink. But the maka is the water turning to blood, and the impact is separate. But here, the impact is more direct. Maybe that's what Yad Hashem means. But I just say for Ish Tamid that we mentioned a minute ago, so he has a discussion here at some length, where he suggests that really the nature of Dever, you would think, is that really it should take out everybody. It shouldn't just take out the animals. It should take out the people too, which is, you know, what we sometimes see today, that the animal diseases go to people as well. So really the nature of this makah is that it should have been even more destructive. But there's no point in that. There's no point in wiping out the people. Then there's nobody left to get the message. So therefore there is a restraint, so to speak, that really Dever should have just had an even broader impact. And the Yad Hashem isn't holding back, isn't not letting it have all of the destructive impact that it could have had. And that's it's an interesting observation, it's an interesting suggestion if that's what it means. So here again we find this distinction, this dividing, the Hifla Hashem, Bein Mikne Yisrael, Bein Mikne Mitzrayim, V'loyomus Mikol V'nei Yisrael Davar. So God is going to make a separation from the animals of the Jews and the animals of the Mitzrim, and anything that's from the Jews is not going to die. And once again, the same theme of this direct hashgacha and of making this distinction, that's also going to play out in this makkah as well. V'yasim Hashem Moed Le'mor, Machar Yasa Hashem Hadavar Hazeh Ba'aretz. So once again, here you have it, the night before, tomorrow, this is the simon, that this is going to happen tomorrow. And the first should also point out that this idea of constantly saying this is happening tomorrow is also to offset the idea that anyone would have that any of these makos are simply natural occurring phenomena that just happened because whatever it is. Okay, so there's a flu for the animals going around, or there's a storm, whatever it is. So the fact that not only are they happening, but they're happening with this clear designated time. So that's certainly a huge part of making it understood what exactly is going on here. So this is indeed what happens. V'yas Hashem es ha'davar hazeh mimachar as v'yamas kol miknei Mitzrayim v'miknei v'nei Yisrael lo meis echad. So this is what happened, and all of the miknei Mitzrayim dies, and not from the Jews. The Aznayim Matara has a comment here as well, that Aruv and Dever, these two Makos, they really complement each other. They really have two halves of the equation here, because the relationship of human beings and animals is a complex one. But in general, so we have animals that are here to serve us, that the animals that are workable, that we can interact with, so we domesticate them, or we put them to work, we use them for our purposes. And the animals that are too scary to try to work with, that are too dangerous for us, so we live at a distance from them. They live out in the wild, and we don't interact with them. So that's the normal relationship that humans have with animals. But in the case of the Mitzrim, so the Mitzrim treated humans like animals. And when you have human workers, so you're supposed to be working with them in a normally mutually beneficial format, and that's the way it's supposed to be. And instead, to have people forced to work against their will and people treated in such a terrible fashion, so that is an inversion of what's supposed to be. That is people being treated like animals. So therefore, this also got inverted. So what happens? So the animals they want to stay away from, those animals got brought close. And the animals that they need for service, those animals die. So basically the exact opposite of whatever kind of relationship we want to have with animals, that's what these two makos brought about. And it reflects the fact that the Mitzrim had relationships with people that were basically treating them like animals. That type of reversal reflected itself in this reversal as well. Okay, so this next pasuk, so an interesting idea. Pasuk says, "Vayishlach Paro v'hinei lameis v'miknei Yisrael ad echad v'yichbad leith Paro v'lo shilach esam." So Paro sent to find out what's going on, and he sees Taka, all the Jewish cattle, they're all still alive. So then Paro's heart is hardened, and he doesn't let them go. So what's the connection of one to the other? That was what we said, that the Jews are not going to lose their animals, and the Mitzrim will. So how come this made the consequence, apparently, that his heart is hardened after seeing that? So it seems like he basically had a very narrow view of the situation. He said, oh wait, we're losing all our animals. Oh no, Taka, there's some animals left. Okay, things are fine, so I can go back to the way I was. And some of the Sifrei Musar, happens to be the Sam Derech, or some Chazos Lebroi, has a lengthy piece about this in his Sefer, and the Eish Tamid that we mentioned a few times today makes the same point in some of the earlier Pesukim, that you see repeatedly that the mentality of Paro is just very short range, is very much in the moment. Okay, so if I can survive this hour, that's all I care about. So if whatever is in front of me right now, and that is causing me problems, if we get this market done, then I can't see past that. No one's thinking long term. And that one of the key differences between Tzaddikim and Rishayim, between people who are accomplishing something and people who aren't, and all the other types of distinctions you'd like to draw, is this question. Do you see things only in the moment, only what's directly in front of you, or are you able to see the broader picture, the longer range of what's going to happen beyond today? And the tzaddikim are always focused on the future, always focused on this whole long-term picture. And the Rishayim are not looking anywhere beyond what's right in front of them. And we find this attitude with Paro in a couple of extreme ways. So he suggests to some Darach, that's what this pasuk is getting at, that, oh, okay, look, there's some animals still alive. That's all we need. And he's not going to worry anymore, and his heart is hardened again. So just to continue reading a few more pesukim here. V'yomer Hashem al Moshe v'el Aaron, k'chulachem m'lo chafneichem, piach kivshon, v'zarku Moshe ha-shamayim alein yifaro. So God says to Moshe and Aaron, take these handful of ashes from the furnace and sprinkle it up to Shemayim in front of Paro. V'hayol avak al kol eres Mitzrayim, v'hayol ha-adam y'al beheva l'shchid y'pay reach av abuos v'chol eres Mitzrayim. So it's going to become fine dust. It's going to spread over all of Egypt. And people are going to break out in boils and sores, whether it's the animals, the people, there's going to be boils all over the place. Vayikhu es piach hakivshon vayamdu lefnei faro vayizrako so Moshe shamayma vayhi shchina vabbos parech v'adam v'behemah. So they did that in Taka, this is what happens. And you have boils breaking out all over the place. Lo yochul hachartumim la'amol lefnei Moshe v'nei hashchin. And the magicians, they couldn't handle this, they couldn't stand up in front of Moshe because of these boils. Because they were on them and they were on all the time. So here we find God hardening his heart, a point that we'll address in a moment, and he didn't listen to them, just the way that God had spoken to Moshe. Once again, get up and say in front of him, this is what God said, send me out, send the nation out, and they should worship me. Kiva pam hazos, ani shalech, es kol magif osa yalibcha, uvavadech uvamecha, bavur teda, ki ein kamoni b'chol aretz, because I am sending out all of my magifos now. So what does that mean, all of my magifos? So Rashi has a comment here that's a little bit hard to understand, that Rashi has Lamadnu Mikan Shemakos Bechorah Shkula Kinegachol Makos. All the Makos, because Makos Bechorah is equal to all of them. So that could be true, it was pretty intense, but the problem is we're not up to Bechoros here, right? We're up to Bara. So it's a question, why is Rashi say over here that Bechoros, you see, is equal to everything else? So there's a lot of discussion about this in the Mefarshim. Some suggest it's a typo. You have some different girsas in this Rashi that maybe it's not supposed to say Bechoros, maybe it's supposed to say Bikurim, maybe it's supposed to say something else that refers to other aspects. Maybe it doesn't mean to say that. Others suggest that maybe this is now the last set from the mnemonics that we have from the Seder night. So we're talking about everything leading up to Bechoros. This is now the home stretch up to Makos Bechoros. So that's included here. And the Sefer Chavetzel HaSasharim, he has a short piece where he says that because Devar itself actually had various components to it, so there was the concern that maybe the Mitzrayim were expecting 10 Makos, but they would count it as 4, and they would think they were done. So this was the time to emphasize that this is leading up to one terrible final makkah, and that that makkah is as bad as everything else. And just to read this next psukim, just to say a little bit about that, ki ata shalachti es yadi b'achoscha b'esamcha b'adaver v'tichach ed min ha'aretz, because it says, now I'm stretching out my hand, and I will hit you and everyone with daver, and you shall be cut off from the land. And it's for this that I have set up the situation to show my power and that my name shall be declared. So as I mentioned, this aliyah really kind of could stand in as a sample for the entire parsha. That's really contained already a good chunk of the makos, but also these themes that are there within all the makos. So, for example, this idea of ki ata, the Chafetz Chaim Hashem Olam has a comment that people sometimes are mired, or the Jewish people as a whole could be mired in a terrible situation, and they think, how is it possible there's going to be a geula? Everything is so bad, everything we're in so deep. How is it possible that things are going to get better? And to that, so what happens is that we find that Kadosh Baruch Hu's geula can happen very quickly, and God can turn things around whenever he wants. And that's what he emphasizes here as well. That right now I'm sending my hand out to you, and that the only reason why it's not immediate is because there's still a message to learn. There's still more of an education process that has to happen here. But as far as God's ability to reverse things, he can do that ki ata, that can happen right now. So this whole idea of the education process and the theme of the makos So there is a lot philosophically to talk about here. It's really the whole theme of this parasha and of next week's parasha, and we'll just say a few words about it. But the whole idea that God hardens Paro's heart and hardens the heart of the Mitzrim, so this is a major philosophical discussion. How do we reconcile this with our belief in free will, our belief that we have the ability to make the decision to do right, to do wrong? Here it sounds so many times in these parashios that Paro and that his people didn't have a choice, that God intervened in order to make things this way, that they wouldn't turn around. So there are many theories in the Rishonim, and there's a lot written about this that discusses the various approaches. Among the approaches, you find that maybe the idea is there's a difference for kings. The Radak says like that, but Yonah says like that, that dealing on a national level, Bechira Chavshis, is not exactly the same. While others say that maybe when we talk about a lack of Bechira, so that eventually could happen, that everyone has the path in front of them to choose to go one way or the other. But once you've already traveled along a certain path, you don't necessarily always have the ability to go back, or the ability to go back so easily. And this is something that we find, that even though tshuva is effective, but tshuva isn't always possible. That sometimes a person has sinned to such a degree that they can't so easily just turn around. And the idea that we should have even the opportunity for tshuva, that's a chesed of the Ribono Shel Olam, that he should allow the circumstances to be such that we can change path. And someone can have enough of a bad history that's not simple and maybe not even possible. So Paro, perhaps in that category, is how many understand that Paro made his choices early on in life. But once things have gotten to this point, the idea that at any moment he should be able to say, okay, I'm going to reverse it, and if it was nothing, I'll just do Shuvah today. So from a certain perspective, that's not necessarily just either. That's not necessarily so fair that you can do horrible harm to the world and just say, okay, I'm going to get up in the morning and decide I want to be somebody new, and I don't have the consequences of my actions. Tshuva is a privilege, and that privilege is not open to everyone. And this is something which perhaps is true about big-scale Rishayim like Paro and the like. The question always comes up, can Nazis do tshuva? Can other people who have done egregious, horrible harm, is it possible for them to turn around? But it's true also on some level or another for all of us to recognize that our averos are just that, they are averos, but they also have a weight to them, and they also have a consequence both in the real world, the impact that our misbehavior has, but also on our personalities. Our personalities are changed by repeatedly engaging in averos. So that's the idea that Gemara has, the Rashi Kan Biavner Goldust, there's a whole essay about this in the Sefer, and the Asufas Marachas and Ve'era, that the notion, for example, the Gemara says that when a person has repeatedly sinned, nasilo keheter, that the Avera then presents itself to him like something which is permissible, something which is okay to do, because essentially your whole attitude changes and your whole personality changes. And the same way we believe that practical mitzvahs are important, and the Sefer Achinuch is often quoted as saying, aferei ha-pu'ulos, nimshachos ha-levavos, that our actions have an impact on how we think and how we are inside. So that is definitely true. That is definitely the case. And therefore, it's not simply that, okay, you can do an Aveira today and do a Tshuva tomorrow. You do an Aveira today, there's an impact to that Aveira. And there is a weight to that. And there is a effect on our personalities. And therefore, the hope that you can reverse that. So yes, hopefully we believe that that opportunity is going to be there for us, but we have to work to earn that opportunity and to create that opportunity. And that's one of the major messages that we find coming out of the Makos and really coming out of this whole process, that essentially you have this kind of tension in these psukim, that it seems like there's a mixed message, that God is saying, all right, I want you in Mitzrayim to understand what you've done and what you're doing wrong, but I'm not really going to let you reverse it so easily. And yes, that mixed message is essentially the point, that you have to learn that there is injustice here, but still it's not necessarily going to be even possible for you to automatically reverse that, that you're going to have to recognize that the past injustice and the accumulation of all of this evil in the world has an actual impact, and that reversing that isn't always possible, or certainly isn't easy, and requires a much greater effort than simply saying, okay, I'll snap my fingers tomorrow and let the Jews go, and that will end everything. So it's a pretty important philosophical point. And again, as we read this week's parasha, next week's parasha, to try to understand what exactly is the theme of this whole experience that's happening, what exactly is going on, this is one of the major motifs that we find in these parashas, and hopefully should give us some perspective. Okay, so God willing, on Sunday we'll talk about one of our